Warning, the following episode of the Z-Realm podcast is both shocking and disturbing. Listen at your own risk.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Z-Realm podcast. My name is Marty, and I am joined by my co-host, KMO.
Hey!
We have watched a very motley selection of movies that we want to talk about on this episode, and the one that we're going to lead it off with is 2008's Zombie Strippers. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, with a title like Zombie Strippers, this is going to be some highbrow conversation. Well, you might be right.
I think we should say, right off the bat, that we're going to be dealing not only with zombie strippers, but also another movie called Dead Girl. These are two films that deal with zombies and sex and sexual politics, and you're likely to get pissed off about these things if you have strongly held political or ideological beliefs surrounding these topics. And so, this is fair warning. This episode may well make you angry. So, first we have Zombie Strippers. And Zombie Strippers is, it would be like a made-for-sci-fi TV movie. It's such low budget, except it's full of nudity. So, obviously.
And language.
And language, yes.
And gore. God, the gore.
So, the title is quite descriptive. It is Zombie Strippers. It is a, in addition to being just nakedly titillating, and really a gore fest and exploitative in a few different ways, it's also a very political film. So let's go ahead and play the intro to it, which sets up the premise and gives you a taste of just how political it is and how obvious its political allegiances are.
Yes, it wears it straight out on its sleeve.
If it had sleeves.
If it had sleeves, that's right. Straight out on its garter belt.
George W. Bush has won his fourth consecutive term as president, taking Florida, which due to a computer glitch inherent in the Jeb B. voting terminals, tallied one single vote for President Bush and Vice President Schwarzenegger. Bush's presidency was unanimously declared legally binding by the Supreme Court, as well as totally cool by Chief Justice Jenna Bush, who subsequently set in motion another supreme kegger. Following the landslide victory, a constitutional amendment banning public nudity was implemented. Shortly thereafter, President Bush dissolved Congress, claiming it was cramping his style. American troops continue to be strung thin due to the still raging wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Iran, Lebanon, Libya, Pakistan, Venezuela, France, Canada, and Alaska. One American corporation has discovered a scientific military solution to the looming troop shortage crisis.
Here at W Industries, top scientists, in cooperation with the United States military and due to the shortage of American troops, are developing a toxic, easily transmittable chemovirus that acts to reanimate dead tissue. But we assure you, due to the extreme level of volatility of such tests, the research facilities are unequivocally, in accordance with the United States government level of standards, fail-safe.
So in the movie, as is mentioned there, there is a evil mega corporation called the W Corporation, or W Industries, and there's a point in the film where you can see the sort of, I guess, the logo for this corporation on the wall, and it has a picture of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Karl Rove. And there might have been a fourth person.
I think there is a fourth. It might be... not sure. It might be Condoleezza Rice.
I can't remember. I think it was four dudes, but I'm not sure.
But they're arranged as if they were Mount Rushmore.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Because really, that's where they belong. But so this corporation has developed a top secret and highly probably illegal drug that takes dead tissue and reanimates it as a way to keep soldiers on the front lines in all of America's wars. Set in this future that the movie takes place in, and it's what they say, it takes a soldier and turns it into a super soldier,
right? Except it works better on women than it does on men. women are able to maintain more of their own intellectual integrity, whereas men just turn into ravening fiends.
Yes, that's one of the best lines in the movie. it's just like everything else. When you add men into it, it all goes to shit.
So, of course, the contagion gets out, but it's contained within this government facility, so some elite troops are brought in to clean up. And in the process, one of them gets bitten. And he sees that they're executing everybody else who had been bitten, so he escapes and takes refuge in a illegal basement strip club, which is run by a guy named Ian, who is played by Robert Englund, who is best known as Freddy Krueger.
Right.
And working the door is Tito Ortiz in a throwaway role. And Tito is there because his girlfriend is basically the star of the film. Jenna Jameson is the superstar stripper at this club.
And, of course, if you don't know who Jenna Jameson is, you spend very little time searching the internet without safe search turned off. Because you would have seen her in all her glory by now if that were not the case.
And you see her in most of her glory in this film,
yes,
I would say.
Such that it is.
Yes.
One of the interesting things about the guy that gets the contagion and breaks it out is that his character's name is Bird Flu. It's like Jack Bird Flu or something. The squad, this elite, super competent squad of soldiers is called Z-Squad, I believe is what they said, or... Yeah, I think it's Z-Squad, and they totally do not look like they have ever touched a gun before. Not a one of these people, but they're all very good-looking. So, again, it's one of those movies where if you start trying to let the logic be something that you need, you're not going to enjoy this movie. You just need to sit back, enjoy it, and let it just kind of wash all over you.
So, for example, when we get into the strip club, Jenna Jameson just pole dances naked for a while. And the camera just sort of lingers on her, and every now and again it cuts to the crowd, and it shows the men in this underground bunker of a bar enjoying the strip show. But really, that bit is there for you, the male viewer. This is your candy up front. And then, at the end of her dance, this bird flu soldier leaps on her and rips out her throat, and she dies.
Right.
And they take the soldier, the DJ, and the doorman,
right.
And they basically just throw him in the cellar, and he's just loose in the tunnels underneath this place.
That's right.
Yeah. And Jenna, Cat, as she's called in the movie, she's very ambitious. She is the most zombie-like of the strippers to start with. She's the one with the least human emotion. She seems to have no psychological vulnerabilities at all. Backstage, where a lot of the film takes place, where the dancers all sit in front of their mirrors and get ready to go on stage, she's sitting there reading Nietzsche.
Yes.
Yeah, so she comes back from the dead, and she walks into the dressing room. She announces that she's back, and then she goes out on stage, and she dances, and she kicks ass. She dances like she's never danced before.
That's right. She's a maniac on the floor.
Indeed. And then she picks an audience member out and takes him into a back room for some special treatment where, of course, she kills him and eats parts of his body. And then she comes back and presents herself to the other dancers. And now the owner of the club has discovered really the depths of the situation in which he is. What's the word I'm looking for? He's mired.
Yes, it is a quagmire.
Yes.
For sure.
So Ian, the club owner, is talking with Madame Blavatsky, who is the stripper wrangler. She is
great.
Yeah, she's the one in charge of all the girls. She keeps them motivated. And so he thinks that they've got a problem, and Madame Blavatsky's not so sure. So let's play that clip.
Boss, we have a problem.
Could be problem.
Yeah, well, the only problem I've got right now is Senor Illegal over here, who's down in my booze.
Really? But this, huh, boss? Huh, jefe? Huh? Maybe this is something worse to worry about. Huh?
Okay. Let's see if I've got this straight. Our best stripper is a reanimated corpse who is feeding off the living flesh of our customers, who in turn reanimate, even if they're just a fucking head.
And you don't see this as a problem.
This is what I think. I see stripper dead. And then I see her not so dead. I see severed head and not so dead too. But I also see not so dead stripper strip. And she's net. She, how you say, knock them dead. Or not so dead, this case may be.
So, your fucking point?
My point is lots of money. I never see performance before like tonight. Nice boys out there never see performance before like tonight. So, I think nice boys tell more nice boys. And soon lots of nice boys throwing money at us. So, that is why I say, not so dead nice boy in head form. Maybe not so much problem. His head. Easy to, how you say, brush under carpet. Head? I see no head.
What head? You see head?
Me?
Severed zombie head. Please.
So in that clip, you actually heard Madame Blavatsky, the stripper wrangler slash den mother. And you also heard Paco, the custodian janitor character, who is a very intentional, very racist portrayal of this, I guess, supposedly Mexican character, but done on purpose and with a very broad sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I mean, it's extremely funny. And I don't know, just he was probably my favorite character in the movie. So, yeah, so that's where the great plan comes into play, where it's laid out that what they're going to do is allow this zombie stripper, at this point just one, the Jenna Jameson cat character, is the only zombie stripper they have working. But her income was high, and they thought it was great, and who cares, because when they're done with the victims, there's very little left, so the heads or whatever are remaining can just be brushed under the table. So this is, you know, capitalism on display.
Yes, indeed. And Kat, Jenna Jameson's character, she is the lead stripper here. She was even before she turned into a zombie. But she has competition from another ambitious and sort of angry stripper, whose name I don't remember. And really, it's not important. She's not in any of the clips that I've picked out. But there is this rivalry between them. And when the rival goes on stage after the zombie stripper, she's gorgeous, and she's a talented stripper. She does her thing, but she gets booed off stage. The audience is jaded now. They want the sort of no-hold-barred, absolute sexual aggression that the zombie strippers embody, and they will not settle for live strippers any longer.
And this, rival stripper is, without a question, in my personal opinion, at least as hot as Jenna Jameson. So it's one of these things that just seems completely weird, but the movie doesn't take any pains about showing men as easily led and slaves to their, sexual desire. So it's a case of the zombie stripper can come out and do all these supernatural moves and spin and at like ultrasonic speeds, and I mean it's impressive stuff. And but it's that's what they need now.
So the rival stripper has got a motivation to become a zombie herself. And the other strippers do as well. One, they're not getting any stage time because the audience members don't want any live girls anymore. And two, well, let's introduce a new character. There is a young, very wholesome, blonde farm girl who has come to be a stripper so that she can save up money for her nana's operation. Her nana needs a colostomy operation. And her name is Jessie. Jessie's a very sweet, naive character, and obviously, she's built like a stripper, and she goes out on stage, and she tries to strip, but she gets intimidated by the crowd, and she chickens out, basically.
This is prior to the zombification of Jenna Jameson.
Yes.
This is all in the early sort of, here, let's introduce all these characters stage.
But later, once Jenna becomes, or Kat becomes a zombie, then Jessie is motivated to become a zombie as well, because she wants the approval of the audience. She also wants to, get the money that having the audience's approval will get her, but really it's not about that. It's about her own lack of self-confidence and her own lack of self-esteem. She wants to be invulnerable and really aggressive like the zombie strippers. And then there's another character. Her name is Barange. And Barange and Jesse sit next to each other in the dressing room. And so what I've got next is a couple of clips. These are two different clips mashed together, but they both take place in the dressing room, in which Jesse is talking about becoming a zombie, and Barange is telling her that that's a stupid idea.
Okay, here's the clip.
Don't tell me you're still thinking of going through with this.
I have to.
You can't compete with what's out there.
I'm thinking of getting Kat to, you know, for my Nana.
That's an excuse, and you know it.
Perhaps. But listen to that. That acceptance, that praise, the confidence in that, the sense of pride, self.
It's not a sense of self out there, but regression towards the mean.
But it's so fucking cool.
Okay, girls, go home.
Tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow.
Jesus, you look like a corpse.
That's the plan. It's my duty to conform.
No! Your duty is to be an individual. The mind is a flame to be kindled, not a vessel to be filled.
Oh, foolish and naive Barange. Your optimism makes you an idiot.
What did you call me?
An idiot.
No, an optimist. Don't you ever fucking call me an optimist again.
My mind's made up. I must submit for my Nana, for my sense of acceptance, for the luxury of not having to think for myself anymore. Call it what you want. In the end, it's all the same.
So, yes, so that was Barange and Jesse talking in the stripper dressing room. And you also, when you meet Jesse, the wholesome Nebraska corn-fed stripper, you also meet her boyfriend who follows her there and is just sort of like watching her and hoping she won't do this because he likes her being as pure as the driven snow. But she needs, in her mind, to get this operation for her Nana, or at least that's her story. And the boyfriend, I don't even know if he's a character worth talking about much, but he is this guy who has a story of being all pure and everything, but when the time finally comes, he just reveals himself to be no different from all the other guys, really, and he just wants sex. And sex in the midst of a full-on zombie apocalypse. So, again, a guy.
But in those clips, you heard some of the political message of the yes. film coming out. Women are driven to do all manner of vile things to their body in order to secure the approval of men. And it goes, you know, way beyond getting boob jobs and all the makeup and money they spend and, you know, liposuction and all that good stuff, but extends to letting zombies bite you and become one of the living dead. And something that I found really interesting was that just like in any other zombie movie, once the strippers become zombies, they start to decay and they start to look pretty gross and their skin is all flaky and, you know, they lose the nice skin tones and the texture and they start to look like zombies, but they still have the big full round breasts. Mm-hmm. And apparently that's all the audience members care about, that and just the, you know, complete lack of inhibition that the zombie strippers have.
Yes.
And so
the confidence, the aggression, all that.
Later in the film, the lead strippers who have become zombified are all stripping on stage, and they all look gross. I mean, they look like corpses, and yet the audience members are in no way turned off by this. They're all for it.
Yeah, it's really a nice sort of allegory between the sort of torture and the self-imposed torture and restraint and all the other stuff that women are asked to go through in order to be accepted and to be appealing and to, you know, have a place in society. You know, this is the ultimate, of course, version of that if you're willing to just give up completely on your life. But, you know, I think that there's the danger for women and for people in all, you know, situations of losing their identity, you know, on a daily sort of personal level, where when you take a job or you take a role on that you become that instead of who you really are. It's the line that she says there in that clip about the mind being a flame to be kindled and not a vessel to be filled. So I think that, you know, celebrate who you are, not try to, you know, meet some sort of standard or be accepted or, you know, worry about how you're perceived.
Well, Marty, I think you've made the case for why you like this film. You liked it better than I did. This is your second time through?
Maybe third.
Maybe third?
Yeah.
There'll be no second time for me. I didn't care for it. For me, I mean, I appreciate the parts of it, particularly the bits that I've picked out. I've picked out all the clips for this particular episode. And for me, the sugar that was supposed to be the lure and the reward for enduring all the sort of ugliness wasn't very sweet. I don't much care for the porn star aesthetic. I don't like fake boobs. It wasn't, you know, the parts that were supposed to be the payoff didn't pay off for me. And the parts that were squirmy were just as squirmy as they would have been for anybody else. Paco, I think, for me, was also about my favorite part of the film.
Well, it had other things to, I mean, obviously, when you've got women who look like they're rotted corpses, that is not going to be appealing. To me, the thing that's appealing about the movie is that it was smart. I think it said a lot of stuff that you wouldn't expect from a movie named Zombie Strippers, and it had some spectacularly over-the-top gore.
I agree with that. It did a lot with a very small budget.
And, I mean, if you're a person who likes to see things get killed or ripped apart and munched, I mean, you're going to have a hard time finding something that does it better than this, especially something that was made for this little bit of money. And it is funny. I think it's genuinely funny. And Robert Englund, as the Ian character, the owner of the club, he is a germaphobe, and he's completely freaked out by the strippers. He doesn't want them touching him, and he does a lot of very funny stuff in the movie. He's got some great lines. It's good to see Robert Englund acting. I don't know. It's just I think when you take the movie into consideration for all the different ways it could have failed, I think it's a remarkable success. And I also think it's like really smart, independent filmmaking to take something and try to make a point, but then to wrap it inside gore and nakedness to get it an audience. So I celebrate this movie, despite its distastefulness.
All right. Well, the next film we're going to talk about is even more disturbing. And it's even more disturbing because it's far more realistic.
Yes, and not funny at all.
And not the least bit funny. It is called Dead Girl. And it is about these two guys, two best friends, high school age guys. They're not jocks. They're not popular. These are just the loser guys. And I kept thinking of Columbine High School as I was watching this. And one guy, Ricky, he's basically our protagonist. He used to be the boyfriend of Joanne. Joanne is now a very pretty girl, and she's dating a football player.
But that was like elementary school.
Right, they were 12.
This was long ago.
Yes, and Joanne was Ricky's first kiss, and possibly his only kiss to date, whereas Joanne is obviously a very popular girl, and she has her pick of boyfriends. And Ricky's friends keep telling him, man, don't live in the past, because that is not coming back. She is, you know, she's dating the higher caliber social guy now.
And she's out of your league.
Yeah,
Ricky.
You ain't it. So Ricky and JT cut class one day, just because it's hot, and they go and get some beer, and they decide to go and hang out in an abandoned mental institution. And they drink beer, and they break stuff, and they just kind of go wild for a while, and then they wander on down into the catacomb-like basement or sub-level.
And they're chased by a vicious dog, and in their flight, they run into a room where the door is sort of rusted shut. And they try to escape through that door, and when they open the door, they discover something.
Yes, they discover a girl strapped down to a table. She's naked, but she has plastic over her. And she looks like she's dead, but then they see that she's moving. Her eyelids are fluttering, she's breathing a little bit, and they take the plastic off of her, and they see that she is she's very dirty. But she's also beautiful. She's got a great body, and she just looks great.
But she's restrained, like with straps.
She's
held down, and the door was rusted shut. They know the door was rusted shut, so it's the kind of thing, it's been there for a while. The girl's been there for a while, and that's the only way in and the only way out. So they're looking at her, and she's alive, and she's been in there so long that there's no real excuse for why she would still be alive.
So let's listen to a clip. This is from the scene where Ricky and JT, these two friends, have found the dead girl.
JT, what the hell, man? What's going on? What is it? fuck is him?
What?
You're gonna believe this, Ricky.
Holy shit, man. Yeah, I told you.
What the fuck is she doing down there, Chief? She's lost herself to that fucking van, man, that's for sure.
We gotta get out of here, man. What if she decides to come back, bro?
Just hold on a second, bro. Just hold on a second. This fucking naked woman, man, let go.
Oh, shit.
We gotta get out of here, JT. Hold on a second. She's all right now. Now, we had to pry that door open, right? You saw it yourself.
It was rusted shut, you know?
She's been raising hell here all day. There ain't nobody here but us, man.
All right,
good, man. Good, now let's free the fucking girl and get the fuck out of here, man, please. JT, man, maybe some girl's been missing, right? I mean, there could be some kind of reward or something, you know?
We could keep her.
Free the girl and get the fuck out of here, please, man. I'm begging you. What are you doing, man? Come on.
Oh, that's nice, man. You gotta come here. Come here and feel that. Come here and feel it.
Come here and feel it, man. There's no way I'm gonna fucking...
You're lost.
JT, cut it out, man. Seriously.
Just get the fuck off of me, man.
No, man.
What are you doing, man?
The fuck, JT?
Okay, well, so in the clip we just heard, JT and Ricky find the dead girl. Ricky wants to let her go, and JT wants to keep her. And JT starts feeling her and trying to get Ricky to do the same thing. And Ricky is insistent that JT stop, and JT hits him. And then Ricky leaves, and JT stays. So...
Yeah, so the next time that we that Ricky goes down there, because Ricky is really our touchstone in the movie. I mean, he's the character that I guess the audience is supposed to identify with. And when Ricky goes back to...
Well, before he goes back, he goes home.
Yes.
He picks up the phone and dials 911. He's going to report the dead girl.
Right.
And then his mother's boyfriend comes in.
Right.
Clint. Sees that he has a split lip and tells him that he's got to be a man. He's got to man up and he's, you know... Basically can't let anybody else fight his battles for him. And without knowing it, Clint talks Ricky out of calling the police. So Ricky goes and gets a gun. And he's shooting the gun, just target practicing, and then JT shows up and says, I hope you don't see my face when you pull the trigger.
Right.
And JT convinces Ricky to go back and see the girl.
Right.
And then JT grabs the gun and shoots the dead girl who's strapped to the table 3 times in the torso. Ricky, of course, is terrified, freaked out, thinks that his friend has flipped out. And then JT shows Ricky, look, she's still moving. She's not really bleeding. She can't be killed.
Well, and before the gunfire, I think, doesn't JT admit that he was beating her because she tried to bite him?
Yes. He was having his way with her, and she was biting at him, and he says he hit her.
He says he hit her, and then he kept hitting her, and then he kept hitting her.
Yes.
And hit her some more because she wouldn't stop. And he's just telling the story like he was telling him how he... You know, did anything else? Did the laundry? You know, but he was beating this person who was tied her. I don't know, it was at once a human being, but they're tied to a chair or to a table, completely restrained, and, I mean, not necessarily helpless, but, you know, unable to really defend themselves or fight back, and he's just wailing on them. And it's just one of these things where you really start to see what kind of guy JT is.
JT is a psychopath.
Completely.
He's revealed over the course of this to be completely without care or empathy for anybody. But he's even holding back in the telling of the story. Because after he shoots her, he admits to Ricky that he had choked the dead girl and pressed on her throat so hard that he felt her neck break. And he knew she was dead, but then she came back and tried to bite him again, so he did it all over again. Mm-hmm. So he basically choked her to death twice and then shot her. And now he's going to continue having sex with her.
Because he figures, hey, why not?
Yeah. Ricky still has not had sex with her, doesn't want to, but has agreed not to report JT to the police. But they make a pact that it will be strictly between them, that nobody else will know of this.
Right.
And then...
Well, JT and Ricky have a fairly serious falling out.
Mm-hmm.
And Ricky is just sort of out of the picture for a while. And it's later that he realizes that JT has not really been so much keeping his mouth shut.
Well, Ricky, even though he hasn't had sex with the dead girl, is thinking about it.
Yes.
And there's a scene where he's dreaming of his ex-girlfriend, Joanne, who is now dating the football player, Johnny. And the dead girl basically intrudes into his sexual fantasy. So he's obviously thinking about the dead girl when he's thinking about sex. And then he goes down to, you know, the underground in the nut house and finds the third of the three musketeers now. There is Ricky, JT, and now Wheeler. Wheeler's a stoner-type character. And when Ricky comes in, Wheeler, and there's no point in dressing it up, Wheeler is fucking the dead girl. And there's really no other way to say it, because he's not having sex with her, because she's not really a participant. And so Ricky confronts JT about, one, including Wheeler, and two, about the fact that the dead girl, she seems to have something going on behind her eyes. You know, there seems to be something right in her head. She's not completely an automaton. And that is where the next clip picks up.
All right, so here's the clip.
She's been looking at you.
What?
Like she knows something.
What the fuck are you talking about, Ricky? Look, we can make things easier. We can call her Joanne if you want. But you know that that ain't a real human being, man. Right? You know that. It's all right.
That's besides the point, man.
Oh, is it? Well, what are you doing down here, huh?
That's not what... God damn it, JT.
If you want, man, we can, like, flip her over. We haven't hit her backside yet.
No!
Ricky, pal, what's wrong?
This whole thing is fucking over, you guys. Seriously, we're all gonna get arrested or worse. I mean, JT.
I mean, look, how long we known Wheeler? All our lives? He knows how to keep a secret. He knows a good thing when he sees it, don't you, Wheeler?
I know a good thing when I fuck it.
There you go. So you see, there's nothing to worry about, Ricky. It's just you and me and Wheeler and the dead girl.
She's not just some dead girl, man.
Well, I did kill her 3 times. Go on, give it a try. Get on in there.
Man, it's fucking sweet. Fucking get in there, man.
Go on. Go on. Oh. Ricky, all right, well... Come back in a couple hours. We'll be gone. You can have a nice, private, romantic time and do lots of nice, sensitive things.
All right. So there was Ricky confronting JT and Wheeler about the situation. But I did want to mention one brief thing. Before Ricky goes down there and finds Wheeler and you know the and JT and the girl, and he is having his sexual fantasy, thinking about his old flame, and thoughts of the dead girl do pop into his head. I mean, it is not a it is not titillating to Ricky at all. I mean, he's in mid sexual fantasy, and when the dead girl pops into his head, it stops the sexual fantasy, and I think that's when Ricky decides he needs to go down there and maybe see about settling this. When does he get the bolt cutters?
Well, that comes a little later.
It's after this.
Yes.
But so Ricky goes down there. I think he's just, again, feeling guilty about this whole situation. So when he gets down there and sees, you know, what was going on, that's when that confrontation takes place. But Ricky is really he's the good kid of this bunch. And, I mean, you know, he's not a good kid, but he's the better kid of this bunch. And I just wanted to make that clear. I don't even know if that needs to be left in, but...
Well, and Ricky thinks that the dead girl is, you know, she's got some humanity to her and that she deserves better than this. So he resolves to set her free. And he goes and he gets some bolt cutters from his friend at the junkyard.
Right.
And he comes back and he takes the gag off of her and he frees one of her hands. And as soon as he does, she grabs hold of him and is ferociously, you know, attacking him, even though she's lying face down on a table and only has one hand free. And he barely gets away from her just as Wheeler and JT return. Mm-hmm. And they don't see that she's got a hand free. And JT gets on top of her to go about using her, and she attacks him, scratches his face pretty badly, hits him really hard, and she's just ferociously aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So even though she might have some light of intelligence behind her eyes sometimes, she cannot be set free.
No.
It is not an option.
JT, who is a psychopath, is actually fairly smart. So when he realizes that she's been released at least halfway, he realizes that somebody has done that. And he knows that only Ricky knew that they were down there. So he rightly starts screaming out to Ricky, who's hiding, you know, I know you're out there, and I'm going to have a gun the next time I see you, and we're going to settle this. So now the bad blood between those two guys has just gotten worse. And I think that both of them would still like to keep the friendship around because they are essentially the two of them against the world, I think, in a lot of ways. And that whole idea is really the other main thrust of the film, which is about, you know, the class differences and how these two guys, Ricky and JT and Wheeler, are from this subclass that, you know, they're not the popular guys, they're not the best-looking guys, they're not the smartest guys, they don't have the brightest future.
They're not college bound.
They're, you know, maybe not even career or job bound. They're just maybe unguided, just sort of lost, you know, looking for some kind of thing to hold on to. And I think that's kind of what the movie is saying, is that, like, even a dead girl in the basement, at least that's some sort of thing, you know, something they can hold on to and have, and the closest maybe to what would pass for normal that they can get, or at least in their mind.
I'll return to that in just a second. Let me just advance the plot a little bit. Wheeler and Ricky are walking across the parking lot at school, and Johnny, the football player of Ricky's love, Joanne, has noticed that Ricky has been looking at Joanne, and he and his sidekick Dwyer rush up and start beating the heck out of Ricky. Wheeler tries to intercede, gets beaten up as well, and Joanne comes over and tries to stop the fight, and does break it up for a moment. And as the two jocks are walking away, then Wheeler, in a fit of stupidity, screams out, "We don't need your cheerleader whore. We've got our own sweet whore." And this attracts the attention of the jocks again. They take the two guys, beat on them some more, throw them in the trunk of their car, and basically force Wheeler to reveal the location of the dead girl.
They don't believe what he's saying. They just want to see if it's true or not, and it is true.
So they get into the insane asylum, and Ricky is going to hold the line. He is absolutely not going to take them to the dead girl, so they knock him out with a baseball bat, and when he wakes up, he can hear some commotion, and he goes and he finds that Johnny and Dwyer, the two jocks, are in the room with the dead girl. JT is there. JT is sitting in a chair like it's a throne. He's in his underwear, and he's got, a robe on, and he's really come into his own. He's got this insane sort of confidence with which he can confront these two jocks who are much bigger and stronger and in better shape and could easily beat him to death, but he is the psychological master of the situation. And so what we're going to hear next is a clip of JT basically manipulating the two jocks, and Wheeler and Ricky are also in the room, and Ricky is going to participate in the sort of seduction of getting the two jocks to join their club and have sex with the dead girl. And then I'll spoil the suspense. They do have sex with her. I cut out a good portion of that because there's no dialogue that advances the plot. And just some noises that we really don't need in the podcast. Mm. And then...
Or in our brain.
Yes. And then there is a bite. Johnny the jock gets bitten in a place where you don't want to be bitten. Not that you want to be bitten anywhere, but this is probably the least good place.
Yes.
And then we get the point of the film from JT. So let's go ahead and hear that.
All right.
What the fuck is this? It's just what it looks like, Dwyer. Hot to trot bitch with a yen for dick.
JT?
Johnny. So you boys decided to come by? Give our girlfriend a ride, huh?
No. We were just fucking with Wheeler, all right? Thought he was shitting us.
Ain't no shitting going on here, boy.
What's going on here, JT? Why is she all tied up and beat up and shit?
Because that's the way she likes it, Dwyer. Rough! S and M! And either of you seen any pornos before? That's the way we give it to her. No? Whips and chains and shit? Yeah, that's the way we give it to her. See, she's hot for it. Y'all want to,
Yes. No, man. We're fine, thanks.
We're fine, Dwyer. I'm going in there. We should live.
Two red-blooded, all-American studs like you passing up free pussy.
What, and dip my wick in a puddle of your spunk? I may be horny, but I'm not desperate. Shoot. I got my own sweet pussy waiting for me tonight.
Yeah? Why don't you go for the mouth, then? See, she likes it when she can get it, Johnny boy.
Come on, Johnny. Water looks fine.
What's the matter, man? You scared? Or is she out of your league? I bet you Joanne doesn't do that for you. You know what, Johnny? I bet you're full of shit. I bet that you have had your dick sucked your whole life. I bet you...
Hey! Can't deny the lady, now can we? You're the man, Johnny. You're the man.
Go to the cops and tell them what? That you were raping a chick in the mouth and she bit your dick?
I wasn't raping her. You said she wanted it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they heard that one before.
You said she liked it.
I'll prove it in court when Johnny boy here whips his dick out. Prove when they show photos of her face. Don't forget about Joanne, huh? How you gonna explain this to her? Well, gee, honey, I was just walking through this abandoned mental hospital, and my weenie was hanging out, and I tripped and fell, and guess where it ended up?
That's bullshit! Look what she did to me!
Yeah, well, all the blood's been rushing down there. I'll tell you what, though, you hold off on sticking it to Joanne for a couple of weeks, you'll be right as rain. You tell her you're saving your strength for the, state championships, or whatever the fuck it is you do. Or don't! Go to the cops. Send me and Ricky and Wheeler to jail. And yourselves. See, you won't be fit to tackle a retard with polio by the time you get out. Me and the boys. And well, we'll miss a couple divorces, a handful of brats, and about a billion shifts at the gas station. See, jail is full of motherfuckers like us. We got nothing to lose.
Get off me! Get off!
Not like two.
You're not gonna get away with this, JT.
You're not gonna get away with this, JT. Fucking stupid. Fuck! Get the fuck out of here.
Fuck you, man. Fuck you.
So in that clip, you can hear the interaction when the jocks get down there to the to the lair where the dead girl awakes. And it is not, this is not a movie for most people. This, like KMO was saying about zombie strippers, you know, once was enough for him, and now this was my second time seeing Dead Girl, and I believe that's probably my limit on Dead Girl. Movies like this can, and really typically, I mean, you think about the idea of zombie movies, especially that is already sort of exploitational, or you know, it tends to lean that way. So what you've got is you've got movies that range from just, hey, let's throw some gore on the screen, or hey, let's throw some, you know, nakedness on the screen, and let's get people to you know, pay money to see it. But and then you've got movies like this that's throwing, you know, I guess it does throw nudity. It's not appealing nudity. It throws sexuality. It's not appealing sexuality. There's gore. It is absolutely repellent gore. But the movies like this, and I think movies like Zombie Strippers also, I mean, there's an idea here, and there's a reason they're using the zombie sort of motif as their background on this. This is, these movies are both saying things about society and about people and about the way humans interact. And I think this scene here where you have the guys who are essentially the good guys who've done all the right things, and they're down there faced with this, I suppose, tempting situation. You know, they're still driven by the same forces that are driving JT and Ricky, or JT, and you know, they have their own little buttons that you can push. Like, you can challenge them whether or not they're chicken. Are they afraid? And have them act. And it's in that situation where JT uses his smarts, his brains, to manipulate them and to get them to go ahead and do it, because he knows that once they do it, then they are no longer going to be able to finger he or Ricky, you know, to the police. And it's, in fact, it's Ricky who convinces Johnny to go for the mouth, because Johnny, who is the boyfriend of Ricky's flame, is somebody that Johnny that Ricky would really like to see get hurt, and he knows what's going to happen when Johnny steps up to the plate, if you will.
But in Ricky's defense, once Johnny is in the dead girl's mouth, he has second thoughts. Johnny, or Ricky does, and Ricky goes and tries to warn Johnny and pull him off, and Johnny says, "Get in line, fag," and pushes him away, and that's when the dead girl bites him.
Right.
So Johnny is by no means a sympathetic character. I mean, the first time we meet Johnny, he and Dwyer are playing keep away with a wimpy kid's asthma inhaler.
Yes.
So again, I'm reminded very much of the Columbine incident, and you know, as much as we all have to go tut tut and disapprove of kids taking guns to school and shooting bullies, the bullies frequently have it coming. And, you know, the popular, powerful kids in high school are like the popular, powerful people anywhere. They tend to be real shits, and they deserve what they get in many instances. But in this case, in this scene, actually, we hear two recurring themes that are in the film, one of which I take to be sort of bogus, at least in the way it's presented, and the other I take to be the intended heart of the film, although it totally gets lost. And we hear JT reference pornography as something that has informed him and how he is supposed to approach these sexual situations.
Right.
So, you know, we hear, yeah, we're doing it to her like this, you know, rough, because, you know, it's S&M. Don't you guys watch porn? Don't you know about that? Earlier, you know, he said that the girl looked like she was something out of a magazine.
Right.
You know, and so I sort of took this as an attempt to diffuse feminist criticism of this film in advance by throwing out some standard feminist arguments against pornography.
Okay.
I didn't buy it. I mean, just looking at it as the, I'm not talking about whether or not pornography is a harmful influence in the world or not. I'm just talking about whether that was a congruent message for this film, and it didn't seem like it was to me. But the other message of, look, guys in our social strata, we have very little to look forward to and very little power in life. And you can send us to prison, and really our life's not going to be that much different anyway.
Right.
You know, in a prison...
basically where they're headed.
Yeah. In prison, out of prison, our life is going to be shit. You, the privileged kid, have a lot to lose. So, yeah, you want to go to the police? Go ahead.
Right.
And this message, we're not going to play the clips because it would give away too much of the ending. And as much as, you know, this is a really hard film to watch, I imagine a few people will be interested, and I don't want to spoil the ending.
Right.
But this theme gets repeated again, even more explicitly.
Yeah. That is the core of the thing, is about the social differences, I think, and the bad decisions that you make and how they can really haunt you. I mean, it's a simple thing. When JT and Ricky discover the girl, a simple call to the police would have settled this thing and life would have continued on. But they make a bad decision. They both do. And Ricky then is kind of stuck with his bad decision. JT is happy with his bad decision.
Yes. But, I, you know, we both agree that this class... notion is central to the theme of the film. I think the film writer screws up, though, because this thing is so fraught with the sexual politics, is so fraught with, you know, there's so much bait that is going to enrage feminists in this, that I think his intended point gets lost, and there was really no hope of it ever really shining through. And I haven't read any of the angry reactions to the film, but I understand there have been some. And I'm pretty sure that the filmmaker's intention was just lost amid all of the noise of people being offended at the sexuality of it.
And it could just be the sort of situation where they said, hey, what's going to get us the most press? And let's make something inflammatory, which this certainly is. So it could just be a case of a filmmaker and a writer going, oh, man, this would really piss people off. Let's do it. And let's do it twice as hard as the other guy would do it. And in which case, you know, bravo, mission accomplished. It is definitely not, again, a film for most people. This is a hard, hardcore thing that, and it's not the most violent thing you've ever seen. And it's definitely not the most sexually violent thing that's ever been made.
Nor is it particularly sexually explicit. I mean, we see the dead girl on screen naked for a long period of time, but she's dirty.
She's dirty.
She doesn't move. You know, she shows no indication that she is participating in the sex, and we don't really even get to see the sex, not that we'd want to, given, you know, the setting. So while it is really explicit in its themes, the depiction of it is, I don't want to say arty, but a lot of it takes place off camera.
Thankfully, yeah.
Yeah, thankfully.
Well, that's the other thing. This movie is so slick and so well made and so really well acted and well constructed, the way the plot is unraveled. And, I mean, there are twists and turns. There are things you aren't going to expect, or at least you wouldn't have expected before you heard us tell you about them. And this is it almost makes it worse. If this was a super low-budget, little grungy thing, I think, I don't know, there would be a disconnect where this glossiness, where it seems like a product of Hollywood, just makes all that really like distasteful content really that much more distasteful. I mean, this is not a Serbian film. This is not, you know, Salo or all these other sort of really grim pieces of cinema that have, you know, come out here lately.
It's not a Rob Zombie production.
It's not a Rob Zombie production, so it's, you know, it's good. But I think it's a well-made movie. It's just the content is so strong, and I think it's such loaded content too. I mean, you could really talk about this movie in depth as we're trying to do here. But it's, you know, at its core, it's a movie about teenagers who have sex with a zombie, and that could have been, I guess, treated in a funny way. It could have been treated in a sort of ironic, wacky way. It could have been there could have been slapstick and hijinks as they tried to, you know, make this all work or hide her back at the farm or something, but they did not go that way. This is grim stuff.
Well, I imagine we have pretty much filled up an episode with this grim stuff. this episode is a one-off. We're not going to be so heavy and so serious, we're not going to tread so close to the line of what is just unacceptable for a podcast that is not, you know, looking to gratify people who are into this deviant stuff. So next time we are going to talk about something light and fun. And in fact, it's already recorded. So Marty, do you want to give a little preview of what's coming up on the next episode?
I don't even know how to preview it. Yes, instead of a modern film about sex, this is going to be a movie from about 35 years ago that deals with hippies and corrupt police officials and hypersonic waves. I don't know. I don't want to say much more than that.
What's the name of the film?
The film is called Let Sleeping Corpses Lie. It's also known by an alternate title, The Living Dead in Manchester Morgue. So it is very good. And actually, you probably got some time to go out and find that movie and watch it before we release the next episode. So until then, it's time to start searching. So Dead Girl, Zombie Strippers. Find people you don't like, rent these movies, and destroy their souls.
That's grim stuff. Well, that is all for this installment of the Z-Realm podcast. I'm KMO.
And I'm Marty. And just remember, keep your shotgun loaded, and when you shoot, aim for the head.